Good morning. Well, that was 15 of you. Good morning. Good. You don't know me, so let me just give you about a 5-minute running testimony. Do you know? I'm a missionary to America. Really, I come from the most evangelized place on the face of the earth. Literally. If you believe American evangelists, everybody on my island has been saved 3 times. They'd have to be to get the statistics to add up. I was born on a sugarcane banana cattle plantation in the West Indies. And first came to America to go to college because we didn't have any colleges down where I was from at that time. I've had 3 religious experiences. My first religion, up till about 24, was what I would call a religion of convenience. I learned how to adapt with every crowd I was with. You see, at the age of 7, I was sent off to boarding schools. And so I attended Episcopalian boarding schools. And I just learned how to flip-flop. I was raised in a very religious home, sincere parents. And they live one lifestyle and how we lived another. So I just learned how to flip-flop. I'd get along with any crowd. I found out it was better not to fight authority. Just an easier way in life. So I was one of those lizards that could change their colors easily with whatever crowd I was with and found it very convenient to do so. Now, I went to seminary. And in my first year in seminary, I woke up with the realization I didn't have a faith. I had a second-hand faith. Now, second-hand faith are like second-hand clothes. They don't fit very well. I had some of the faith of my parents, some of the faith of my preachers, and some of the faith of my professors, a sort of mixture, but none of it was mine. I'd come to accept the things that it said because somebody else said them. And so, at about age 24, when I went to seminary, I started out at ground zero again. I answered 3 or 4 questions. Is there a God? Who is God? A lot of people came, different people of God. Who am I? And why am I here? Am I just another animal? When I'm dead, I'm dead. Or am I, just what am I? And for what purpose am I here? If God made us, he made us for some reason. Now, I entered in from a religion of convenience into a religion of conviction. I became convinced there was a God. That Jesus Christ was the manifestation of that God. I came to believe that I was a being made in the image of God and that I was here for a very definite purpose, which I will spell later on. Now, unfortunately, believing certain things, no matter how sincerely you believe them, don't give you strength to change. So I went on like this, and I was pastoring Baptist churches, graduated from seminary at 27, pastored a church in Pensacola, and moved to West Palm Beach. And in West Palm Beach, I entered a crisis. And the crisis was this. Christianity wasn't working for me. It was working for my wife. My wife had a nervous breakdown with shock treatments and everything, trying to be a Christian. And during her recovery, she heard one sentence at a service like the ones we're going to have. And her response to that one sentence was this, I don't believe that. Later in the week, I'll get her to tell you what that sentence was. But 6 weeks later, she was in a crisis one Sunday morning, and she said, God, if that's true, prove it to me right now. And he did. So I've lived with a woman, been married 42 years. I've lived with a woman for 37 years who has demonstrated to me Christ. Far greater than the Bible as proof of God is my wife. She is truth incarnated, and I don't mean to the degree that Jesus was at all. But I've watched her flesh out Christianity. I was preaching it, she was living it. And so in desperation, I wrote God a letter that went something like this. I literally wrote God a letter and stuck it in my desk drawer. Dear God, I believe in you and I believe in Jesus, but if there isn't any more to this business than I've discovered so far, I'm quitting at the end of a year. Now, this time I was pastor of a successful Baptist church. You have to understand what a successful Baptist church is. They have more nickels and noses this year than they had last year. Are you with me? That seems to keep the deacons happy in most Baptist churches. I mean, and let me just stop and say here, it's very important how you measure success. If you measure success in the same way General Motors does in Christianity, you're going to measure it by nickels. And that was one of General Motors' faults, as many of you well know. But I was this, and so I wrote God a letter. And I found out this. I was really going to quit at the end of a year. And I found out this truth right here that I'd like you to read out loud. Okay. Now, would you read that out loud, please? Now, let me tell you something. That was very poor. I mean, for a crowd this size, all I'm asking you to do is to cooperate a little bit. Now, look, the last service had a time limit on it. This one doesn't. Now, look, I didn't come up here to preach a sermon. I came up here to bring a message, and I don't mind saying everything three times. And since I plan to preach for 45 minutes, you can multiply that out. Now, if you want to beat the Methodists to the restaurants, you just cooperate a little bit with me and we'll get out of here. Okay, would you read it again? Now, I want you to change it to read like this. When my desperation factor exceeds my embarrassment factor, I become a candidate for the grace of God. Some of you came to church this morning and lied when the usher shook your hand. He said, how are you doing? You said, fine. You put on that little plastic smile. Listen, we've been trained that way. Let me tell you something. When you wear masks, you don't only keep people out of your life, you keep God out of your life. If God leads, on Wednesday night, we're going to have a service in which we'll be praying for the hurts of people. They're all kinds of hurts. But see, as long as we say, I am doing fine, God's not going to break in our door. He wants to get in, and we have to open the door and say, God, I'm hurting. Well, I said that to God in this letter, and God met me in a Jacksonville hotel room between 12 and 1 o'clock in the morning during that year, or I wouldn't be standing here today. Because I was going to quit. Even though I was paid to do it. I've been a pastor for 42 years. I can't tell you the number of people that have quit. Anybody that's been to church for any length of time can tell you hundreds of people who just quit. Some people who come to church still. The Sunday morning crowd, a lot of you have just quit. You're just coming on Sunday morning in case all this stuff's true. You want to make sure your premiums are paid up. You're really not sure this stuff's true, but hey, you're not willing to take the big gamble on it and just quit altogether. Now, I want these services to be meaningful. Did you hear about the old man that cut his hand and went to the hospital? And when he got there, he saw signs at emergency room, so he went in through the door and found himself in a hallway with two doors in it. One said men, the other said women. So he went through the one called men and found himself in another hallway with two more doors. One said over 55, the other said under 55. So he went through the one over 55 and found himself in another hallway with two more doors. One said over the belt, the other said under the belt. So he went through the one over the belt and found himself in another hallway with two more doors. One said internal, the other said external. Well, he figured cutting the hand was external, so he went through that doorway and found himself in another hallway with two more doors. One said major, the other said minor. So he went through the one called minor and found himself back out in the parking lot. He went home, and his wife said, "Did they help you?" And he said, "No, but they sure were well organized." Now, people are quitting our churches. Listen, the church is in far worse shape today than when I started the ministry 42 years ago. Far worse shape. The church in America is in disaster. And let me show you how to have an experience with God just briefly before I get into my message. Listen. One encounter with God, personal encounter, is worth 500 sermons. One touch from God. One word from God. And your response. You see, one of the things you've got to learn about God, God's not going to crash your door down. He's never going to force anything on you. You're going to have to want God. Let me show you how God sort of works. And the good news is this. God always makes the first move. Most of the time, listen to me carefully, it's a still, small voice. God just says, "Do this." And you've got to decide whether you're going to do it or not. You see, the second move is your response to what God says. Now, one of the things that sin has done to all of us is cause shame. What led to my crisis in writing a letter to God was that I had a lust problem. I understand what happened to Jimmy Swaggart. I understand what happened to Jim Bacon. I understand what happened to hundreds of Baptist preachers too. As far as I can best remember, this started sometime in childhood. I don't even know where. But see, I wouldn't say anything about it because I knew that Baptists shot their wounded. And, you know, I mean, listen. Till we learn how to take care of our wounded, we'll never be the church of Jesus Christ. But see, most of us are wearing masks. We can't tell people where we're hurt. We want shame, pride. Keep us from saying, "I am hurting." There's a woman in here. I don't know who she is. She's hurting this morning. She's hurting out of a relationship with her daughter. Her heart's bleeding. But she smiled and told everybody everything's fine. She could get help if she were to get honest. God speaks, and then I make a response. And you're going to have chances this week to make responses. If God speaks to you, I'm not responsible for God speaking to you. But listen to me. Listen for the still small voice. And if in question, give God the benefit of the doubt. So how do I know it's God? Well, that's part of our problem. We don't know God well enough to know his voice. But if you even think it's like God, give him the benefit of the doubt and see what God can do. You won't be the same. Then see, when God responds, when I respond, then God's going to say something else or do something else. This is how it works. And then, my response to his grace. Now, if you do this, believe me, you're going to encounter God. And you'll never, ever, ever be the same. Now, I want to ask you, honest to God, is your religion working for you? I mean, is it really working for you? If I were to ask you to come up here and testify this morning of how it has benefited you this past week to be a Christian, would you have to think and think and think, or do you know how it's really benefited you to be a Christian? Now, in baseball terms, I'm a first base coach. Now, you can't score unless you touch first base. You just can't score. We've seen people hit home runs and everybody cheered and then they got put out because they missed first base. That's what happened to some of the big guys. Everybody thought they were super Christians. They got called out, they missed first base. Let me tell you something. If you miss first base, you're going to get called out somewhere down the line. Now, I know that there's more stuff than first base, but first base is first base. I want to talk to you about first base because I'm a first base coach. And the theme of my messages this week would probably be this right here, which I'd ask you to read aloud. Would you please? Would you like to make $5?
Yeah.
Okay, get up to that microphone. Okay. Tilt it up where you can speak into it. I'm going to ask, if you can answer three questions right, I'll give you $5.
Okay.
All right. There it is, right there.
$5.
Okay. What is the main thing about a pen?
Main thing about a pen. The ink.
No. I mean, what's its main function?
To write with.
If you have a pen that doesn't write, what do you do with it?
Throw it away.
You don't try to fix it first?
No.
Why?
Because you can get another one.
Okay, good. See, let me just stop here and say this. He's a typical American. Let me explain to you what I mean. We live in a throwaway society. Anything that doesn't work, we just throw it away and try to get another. A marriage doesn't work, we throw it away. We think everything is replaceable. But that's okay, you answered the question right. The main thing about a pen is that it writes. Now look, if this pen has diamonds on it, and it doesn't write, it can't ever be a pen. Okay, question number two. What's the main thing about a watch?
To tell time.
Hmm?
To tell time.
Tell time, good. You got that one right. You're coming. I was in Seattle last week, and we were having lunch, and this preacher showed me a watch he had. He pressed one button, and registered in his watch was the score from the Seattle Seahawks. He pressed another button, and it told him the weather, how cool it was that morning, and how hot it was going to get that day. If you called him up, the number you called from would be registered in his watch. Now listen, if that watch didn't tell time, it was a failure as a watch, no matter what else it did. And it did a whole bunch of other things I've forgotten about. See, the purpose of a watch is to tell time. And you'd rather have a $5 Mickey Mouse special than a $10,000 Rolex if you needed to find the time, if the Rolex didn't work. Because the purpose of a watch is to tell time. The main thing about a watch is to tell time. Okay, let's see. What's the main thing about a pew?
To hold you up while you're listening to the sermon.
Okay, good. There's your $5. Okay, good. I notice these pews are comfortable. They put big, thick pads in there. But the main thing about a pew is that it holds you up, that you can sit down in it. I want to see if you can answer this question. When God made you, what's the main thing he wanted? Don't answer it out loud. What does God want? What's God after? I was raised in an economy. Listen to me carefully. A religious economy. A Baptist economy. That stuck over Sunday school doors that we were saved to serve. We are not saved to serve. You are saved to do what you were made to do, and you weren't made to serve. A few summers ago, my watch became a sinner. It really did. I was playing tennis with Jack Taylor, and it quit telling time. And I took it to the juror, and he said, I think I can save it. Now, the reason I know it was saved was not because he had a 3x5 card in the jewel office with my name on it. The reason I know my watch got saved because it was telling time. Why did God make us? What does God want? Then the question is this. Is it true about us? Let me show you what a sinner is. A sinner is a person who is lost to God and his purposes. Purpose of a watch to tell time. A sinner watches one that doesn't tell time. Purpose of a pen is to write. A watch that doesn't sell right. I mean, a pen that doesn't write is a sinner watch. A sinner pen. The purpose of a pew is to sit. If it doesn't sit, it's a sinner pew, no matter how many cushions it's got on it. When you and I are not fulfilling the purposes of God, we're a sinner. A sinner is not some whore plying her trade downtown. Let me ask you a question. Richard Halverson is a Presbyterian preacher, and he's chaplain in the United States Senate. And he sends out a little newsletter. It's really worth getting. Just one side of one paper, double-spaced, very brief. And last year, about this time, he sent out a paper that said, across the top line was this, what is the greatest sin that a Christian can commit? You know, there's some terrible sins. My God. You know, every now and then I think I've come to the place where I can't be shocked anymore. Then I hear all things that people do. Molesting little girls, fathers. In our county in Florida, the estimate is this. One in every four girls is molested by a one out of every four little girls. And I thought, my God, this is sickening. Those sort of things are terrible. We read about them in the paper. What is the greatest sin that a Christian can commit? It's very easy. It's breaking the greatest commandment. A person came to Jesus and said to them, what do we do first? And this was Jesus' answer to them. Would you read it out loud, please? Greatest thing we do is not to win souls. And if you'd ask me, I've been a Baptist preacher for 41 years. If you'd ask me the greatest mistake we've made, it's this. We put the Great Commission before the Great Commandment. This is called the Great Commandment. Jesus said, our first responsibility is to love God with all of our heart. Then he said the second one is to love our neighbors. What the word neighbor means to this young man that came up here a while ago, his neighbors are his parents. His neighbors are his closest friends. Our neighbors literally mean our near ones. Now, notice what Jesus said. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. What he's saying is this. Nothing works well unless it's built on these foundations. Nothing works well. Hey, build a house without foundations and it's going to come down. Build a life without foundations and it's going to come down. Mr. Halverson is right. He said the greatest sin is breaking the greatest commandment. Now, there are two things I've noticed about people in love. I think it's true in Oklahoma. When you love someone, you try to be with them as often as possible. I remember when my wife and I were in college together, that's where I met her. I would go to, to walk her from one class to the next. I mean, I wouldn't mind walking half a mile to walk her 10 yards and spend 3 or 4 minutes with her. I just wanted to be with her, so I used every opportunity I could to be with her. The second thing is this. When you're with somebody you love, the time goes by real quick. Real quick. You never see lovers on dates say, God, this time is dragging. I wish it'd hurry up and get over. See some guy out here in love with golf. His 4-hour golf game yesterday seemed like 30 minutes. When you are in love with anything or anyone, the time goes back. Let me ask you a question. When last did you spend 30 minutes with God? Remember, God's available. You don't have to come here to get God. You find God anywhere. When last did you spend 30 minutes alone with God and the time seemed like 5 minutes and you didn't ask him for anything? You want me to tell you why our religion isn't working for most of us? We think God's got a 911 number. Listen, if you don't believe that, you go home and call up some of your friends and tell them you're praying for them. You know what they're going to say? What's wrong with me? We associate prayer and God with something wrong with somebody. So we don't see God as somebody that we love. A few months ago, I stood on a balcony, and when I looked that way, I looked at Jerusalem. When I looked this way, I looked at Bethlehem. Now, folks, you got to understand where I am in my life. I can retire. I'm on the last lap of my life and my ministry. And as I stood in that balcony, I asked myself this question, what went wrong? This is where it all started. If there's one word that characterizes that whole region, it is hate. I'm glad to see they're trying to get together. But I tell you something, they're going to have heart changes, not political changes. Political changes don't make you love a person and get along with them. And I ask myself, what happened? What happened? How come where Pentecost evolved and erupted, now the word that characterizes that whole region is hate? Listen, you couldn't find a church in all of Israel as big as this side over here. I mean, listen, they hate Christians. And they hate each other, the Jews and the Arabs. I'm just telling you what a fact is. What went wrong? Because I see the same thing going wrong over here. There are two things that happen when God goes out. Immorality and hostility come in. Let me just say that to you again. Immorality and hostility come in. I see in our country a tremendous rise of hostility and immorality. Do you love him? If you joined a Presbyterian church, they'd make you learn a catechism. A catechism is questions and answers so you can learn what they understand, what they believe. Now, the first question in the Westminster Catechism is this. What is the chief end and duty of man? And the answer to that is the chief end and duty of man is to love God and enjoy Him forever. So I'm going to ask you that, and that's a right answer. Look, the Presbyterians put it up front. This is number one in their catechism. Okay, what is the chief end and duty of man? Now, I'm sure that you're smart enough to understand that the word love has lost its meaning in America because we use it for everything. We use it for X-rated movies. We use it for oranges. I love oranges. And we use it for our girlfriends and our wives and everybody. But the word enjoy has not lost its meaning. Enjoying God is not enjoying church. Church is not God. Enjoying God is not enjoying the saints. The saints are not God. And let me say this very kindly. Enjoying the Bible is not enjoying God. The Bible is not God. I would have to say this. In my experience of 42 years, I know more people that worship the Bible than worship God. You're a very fortunate person if you haven't been beat up with a Bible believer. With their Bible. But loving the Bible, you can love good literature and never love its author. You can love the blessings of God and not love God. Look, I can love my wife's cooking. I can love her kinfolk. I can love the book she wrote and hate her guts. And if you don't believe that, go to any divorce court. The judge will say, she a good housekeeper? Yeah. She a good cook? Yeah. Huh? I just don't love her. I just don't love her. About 6 months ago, I made a statement to church like this. I wish 10 men would come to me and say to me, tell me how to fall in love with Jesus. Well, guess what happened? On Monday morning, one little woman showed up. I'm dead serious. And she said, Pastor, I want to love Jesus. Would you tell me how to love Jesus? And I said, yes, my wife and I will meet with you regularly. And so we have been. I wish you could have heard her last week as she sat in our home and talked about the things that are happening. See, the whole Christian life must spring out of love. That's the only thing. Not out of fear. Out of love. Because I love Him. That's what 1 Corinthians 13 means. If I give my body to be burned and have not love it, profiteth me nothing. If I go everywhere and do everything and work myself sick, if it isn't out of love, it profiteth me nothing. Listen, with God it's all like at a home. What a man wants from a wife and a wife wants from a husband is love. It's not money. It's not a big house. You can have things and never have love. But if love is missing, you haven't got it. Let me tell you what God does to people who fall in love with Him. I just love this. Not last weekend, but the weekend before. This woman's husband lost $500 worth of certificates. And they looked everywhere to try to find it. Couldn't find it. But God said to this woman, I'll tell you where it is. Now listen, this man works at Cape Kennedy, my church. Most of my people work at the Cape. I've got a church full of engineers that work at the Cape. She said she's never been in his office. God gave her a picture of his office and a drawer and a folder in the drawer. And she said to him, you know, some of you women know what I'm talking about. If you get any religious with your husband, they get angry. She said to her husband, listen, would you just do me one little favor? When you go to work on Monday morning, and she described the folder, he said, yes, I have one like that. Would you look in that folder and see if those certificates are there? And guess what he called her at 7 o'clock on Monday morning and said, they're there. Let me tell you something funny that happened last week with this man. He was going to San Diego and I was going to Seattle. And his wife just happened to say to him on their way out, You're probably running to Peter Lord. And he said, how can I? He's going to Seattle and I'm going to San Diego. I ran into him in the Dallas airport. And he said, you know, it began to dawn on him, maybe his wife was tied in to someone who knew a little bit more. He told me the story about that. Sitting in the Dallas airport, we flew back on the same plane to Orlando together. Now, this is how it all works. We live in a world of cause and effect. This is an effect. This is something that automatically happens if you do this. Now let me explain to you this word, because this is the key word. There's a difference in knowing about and knowing a person. I know lots about President Clinton, but I don't know him at all. I don't know whether he has a halo or horns. The Republicans say he has horns. The Democrats say he has a halo. Who's right? See, that's our problem. But I tell you one thing. If I'd done business with Mr. Clinton for 20 years, I'd know who's telling the truth. The word know in the Bible is the same word used for sexual intercourse in the Bible. It is an intimate personal relationship between two people. You know, we're having a koinonia conference. You know what the word koinonia means? It is the Greek word for fellowship. And fellowship is not Kool-Aid and cookies at somebody's house after church on Sunday night. Fellowship is the interaction that goes on between two lovers. That's what fellowship is. Now look, here am I, a Baptist preacher. I distinctly remember telling God one day, God, I don't love you. I don't enjoy you. I like to use God, but not love God. But I said, God, I really would like to love you. I really would like to fall in love with you. I really would like to have that kind of relationship with you. Not just because that's... I really want to know God. You know, let me ask you a question. You did pretty good the first time. Does God like Snicker bars? Now, you can answer one of three ways. Yes, no, I don't know. Yeah. Yes. What makes you say yes? He told you that he likes Snicker bars? Okay, good. That's good. My wife would agree with you. Now look, let me show you what religion is. Religion is pleasing God. It's giving God what he likes. That's what religion is. Now, let me ask you, what you're giving God, do you think, how do you know whether he likes it or not? Now, when you get to know me, you'll find I like Tabasco. In fact, probably every night this week I'll wear a Tabasco tie. Now, let's say you don't like Tabasco, but I like Tabasco, and you're having me over to your house to eat. If you want to please me, you're going to have Tabasco there. If we're going to love God, we want to give to God what he wants, the things he likes. So we need to find out what God likes and give it to him. I tell you what's going to happen to a lot of us. Exactly what Jesus said. At the judgment, some people are going to say, well, Jesus, I taught Sunday school, I cast out demons, I did miracles. And he's going to say, I never knew you. To a church crowd, depart from me, workers of iniquity. That's to a church crowd. He's not talking about the whores and the drunkards and the criminals. He's talking about church people, charismatics and evangelicals. Depart from me, cursed, I never knew you. You know what the Apostle Paul said at the end of his ministry? He said this, everything I have done is like dung compared with the value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. He said, knowing him, it's what it's all about. I want to close with two stories. One is fiction, and the other is real. The Superman of mythology was a fellow called Hercules. And they gave him tasks to do. They were Herculean tasks. And one of the tasks they gave him to do was to clean out the Aegean stables. Now, they've never been cleaned, and they were about that deep, and you know what. So he went to work with a shovel. But you know what happened? They were doing it faster than he could shovel it out. And he saw, I'm losing. Listen, some of you can say, I'm trying, but I'm losing ground. You know you're losing ground. We're losing ground in the church. We are manure shovelers. That's what the church has been. Listen, we go after the piles of manure with our shovels and try to get rid of them. And hey, they are mounting up faster than we can shovel. When I started the ministry, the only two things the church was speaking against was drinking and gambling. My God, they're nothing now. We've got a list that long with names that didn't even exist when I started the ministry. Well, here's what insanity is. Continuing to do the same things and expecting different results. My God, looks like we'd have woken up by now. Well, Hercules realized, I'm losing. I'm going to try something else. North of the stables ran two rivers. He said, I'm going to use all my energies to dig a channel to the rivers. And when he dug a channel to the rivers, the waters from the rivers gushed into the stable and cleaned them out. Folks, let me tell you something. The church does not need to direct its activities towards the dung piles, either in our individual lives or society's life. Listen, we need to use our energies to taking time to know Him, that we can love Him and He can love us in return. That's what we need to do. Now, let me close with a love story. Everybody loves a love story. Here's scene number one. There's a vineyard. And there's a house in the center of the vineyard. And the time is 753 BC. A young man, I want you to get a picture. He's relaxing and thinking about the goodness of God. And when he does, God speaks to him and God says to him, I want you to be a prophet. Now, this man has learned something we all need to learn. It's called instant obedience. He says, yes, sir. He doesn't understand it. He's just an old farm boy. That's scene one. Now, let me tell you about scene two. Now, anybody that knows the Bible can tell you this is a true story. I'm just filling in the cracks. One day he's down at the grocery store buying groceries, and he smells something. It's perfume. And he turns around, and there's the most gorgeous-looking doll he has ever seen in his life down there. Everything is shaped right, whatever that means. I mean, listen, you know what her name meant? Her name meant completeness. I mean, she didn't lack nothing, brother. And you know, something went off inside of him. Boom. Listen, don't forget God invented sex. It's God's idea. It's not the devil's idea. Something went up, boom. He thought, well, I'm going to date her. And he dated her, fell in love with her. They got married. That's scene number two. Now, in case you think I'm making it up, his name is Hosea. Her name was Gomer. They begin to have a family. They get a son. Name him Jezreel. See, Israel, God's people are not doing very well. And he says, God's going to destroy you. Then they have a daughter called Lo-Rama, no compassion. Another son called Lo-Ammi, not my people. They're developing a family. Then a tragedy happens in their home. Gomer has an affair, literally an affair. She has another affair and another affair and another affair. One day she comes home and tells Hosea, I'm through with the marriage. And she leaves. And Hosea is left with three little children. Well, here's scene number four. Hosea is down at the marketplace buying groceries. And he hears a noise down at the end of the street. He turns around and looks. And he spins away immediately because he hates the scene. What they're doing down at the end of the street is they're auctioning off slaves. Back in those days, if you didn't pay your debts, they just auctioned you off and paid your debts. He hated that. He hated slavery. But as he spun away, there was something about the scene that got his attention. He turned around and looked. And they were auctioning off Gomer, his former wife. Her sin had let her down. And now they're auctioning off. And as he turned away with a broken heart, God said to him, go down there and buy her back and take her home and make her your wife again. Now he's learned instant obedience. So I know this had to happen. Remember, you can't force love. I can see as he goes down and according to the book of Hosea, bid 15 shekels for her, which is a very high price for a slave. Then I'm sure he did this. He held his hand up and said, Gomer, I love you. Will you come home and let us learn to love one another again? She's got a choice to make. You can't force love, folks. God will never back arm you to make you love him because that wouldn't be love. Listen, he could get you in fear if he wanted. Love is a choice. She puts her hand into his hand and they go home. Listen, when things are in that bad shape, they don't always get back together right away. But listen, the home so changes that they rename all of their kids. There's a love affair. You know what God was saying? God was saying to Israel, Israel, you've gone a-whoring after other gods. You've forgotten me. Come back home. We'll love one another again. I want to ask you something. If God isn't your first love, who is? Or what is? And that's even more tragic. Have you sort of wondered? Do you remember when you were first saved, how full of love you were? There was the excitement and joy of Jesus, man. You thought nothing can get better. Now it's become a soul of hard, cold, methodical thing where I walk it out. The Bible is as dry as sawdust. Church, for the most part, is boring. You're glad when it's over for another week. God's holding his hand out to you, saying, I love you. You come home, let us learn to love one another again. You come home. You've got choice to make. Listen, folks. From the words of Jesus, our first job is to love him. And our second job, to love each other. Till we have done that, nothing else is really going to work. That's what Mitch and Teresa and the other sister were singing about this morning, knowing him, knowing him. Because, you see, when we get to know him, and here I'm through with this, right? When we get to know him, we're going to love him. We're going to enjoy him. And just think, he isn't confined to Sunday morning from 11 to 12. At Trinity Baptist Church or Park Avenue Baptist Church, I can find him during the lunch hour. I can have fellowship with him anyplace. You know what happened to Israel? They forgot to love him, and he removed the candlestick. A church ought to be a bunch of people who love God in an ever-increasing way and love each other. Where are you right now? Wherever you are, let me say this. Today is the first day in the rest of your life. There's nothing you can do about the past. But there's everything you can do about the future. And you put your hand in the nail-scarred hand. Say, Jesus, I don't love you. But I sure would like to learn to love you. And I promise you one thing. If you'll walk with him, you'll find yourself passionately in love with him. And there are 1,000 byproducts to that I couldn't tell. You know, there are always byproducts to people who love each other. When people love each other, listen, carpets are nothing. Have you ever noticed how lovers give? I mean, if lovers do anything, they overgive. They never undergive. They spend more than they ought to spend. Lovers are full of joy and excitement because that love overcrowns everything else. Let's pray. Now, if you've been away from God, maybe in business, maybe business has become your God. Maybe your house has become your God. But you don't love Jesus anymore. And there's something else you love more than him. Why don't you tell him right now that you're sorry. And that you want to love him and you want to come back to him. Why don't you tell him that? Father, we thank you that You have won your reputation for mercy. And I give testimony to your wonderful mercy in my life. Draw us back to that loving relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.